I'd like to begin by saying I'd be curious to know when did, being a native of Washington, D.C., where so many of the dramas of Anderson's life took place, when did you first become aware of her?
I can tell you exactly when I became aware of Marian Anderson. I was in the fourth grade. I was in the fourth grade at W.B. Patterson Elementary School, and it was at the time Black History Week. I don't know how old you are, but before it became a month, it was a week. And I remember learning about this great woman and, of course, about the story, you know, at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and the whole, you know, drama that played out with the Daughters of the American Revolution and her being denied to sing at Constitution Hall and how Eleanor Roosevelt stepped in. So that very historic moment that happened here in Washington, D.C., and I learned about her. I was in the fourth grade, and I remember that very clearly. And I, at that time, you know, was very young and had no idea the course that my life would later take. Well, and I remember some years ago when I won the Marian Anderson Award back in the early 90s, I think it may have been 92, when I went to her home in Danbury, Connecticut, and I sat with her and we spoke. And I just remember thinking that somehow I stepped into the history books. I couldn't believe, you know, because being a young girl growing up and learning about history and that sort of thing, for us, they were always dead people, you know. And so here was this woman that I'm actually face-to-face with. And I remember reading about her when I was in the fourth grade, and somehow our lives had intersected, and I couldn't believe that that was happening and that I was being honored with an award in her name. For me, I was absolutely floored by this happening.
Well, I was going to say that's one of the more really incredible things, that it turns out that you are one of those in the tradition now. And it's an extraordinary thing, having both won the award and having sung in the tribute at the Lincoln Memorial.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
It's an amazing thing.
I'm so busy with, you know, the day-to-day goings on of my own life and all that I'm responsible for and obligated to and all those things, that I never looked at it quite the way that you just communicated it. And that's cool.
Well, the other thing I'd be curious to talk to you about, because much like you, most of us in the Black community, when you first come to Marian Anderson, it's just as this extraordinary historical figure. What did you think, finally, as you were studying music and you finally heard and began to understand the voice, what did you think about this voice?
Well, it was, you know, for me, it was something that was, you know, sacred and untouchable, much like that of Paul Robeson. You know, Toscanini had called this voice, you know, when I started to learn about who these great people were and, you know, the place that she has in the history of, you know, classical music, just classical music alone, and how she was the first African-American to make her, you know, debut at the Metropolitan Opera in Eureka, following Mascara. That was something that fills me, even to this day, with tremendous pride, just tremendous pride. I remember, you know, back in 2001 after the attacks, the 9/11 attacks, I was asked to sing at the National Cathedral. And that was in front of five, you know, living presidents. And thank God I didn't really understand at the time all the impact that my participation would have, because I didn't really understand until I was out there singing and I saw all of the faces. And the thought that came to my mind when I looked in the face of, you know, Ford and Bush's, the senior and junior and President Clinton and Jimmy Carter. When I was looking in those faces, I thought, I wonder if this is what Marian Anderson felt, what I was feeling in that moment. I thought, I wonder how she felt. I wonder if this feeling that I'm experiencing now is similar or, you know, to what she was feeling that day, you know, on the steps of where Martin Luther King gave the I Have a Dream speech and, you know, this incredible moment of history that she never liked to talk about.
Yes, it's an interesting thing. I love I've been reading some biographies of her preparing for all this, and it tickles me. She reminds me of my grandmother, the way that when she talks to people or writes, she speaks in the plural. She speaks of us, ours, and we, and sort of holding everything that's sort of too close and too personal sort of at a distance. That is in keeping with the incredible dignity of this particular and very, very interesting person.
You're absolutely right about what you say about her, because myself also, when I see tapes of her speaking in interviews, what impresses me so greatly about her is, you know, was not only her poise and the elegance with which she carried herself, but the responsibility, you know, that she seemed to, that she understood that when her face was out there, it was bigger than who she was. You know, that she was representing a much larger community and a great lineage. And I could see that. I could see that she felt that, and she felt a great sense of paying homage to these wonderful soldiers who fought for us to be, you know, where we are, where she was at that time.
Well, mm-hmm.
And that is something that always makes, you know, my back straighten up and makes me walk differently and talk differently, because, you know, it's, my mother used to say to me when I was a little girl, you know, Denise, if you do something that you know you're not supposed to do, don't think you got away with it because nobody saw it. You know, if God saw it, she would say, and your grandmother, my grandmother, who, you know, has long since passed over, your grandmother in heaven saw it. And don't think that you're getting away with something. So live your life as if, you know, God or your grandmother is always watching you. And that's what I think of when I look at her, is that she, what it means to me is that she, the way it communicates itself to me, and this may not have been her reality at all, but that she was living her life as if the ancestors were watching her.
Well, I think there's great truth in that. And also, in your identification, she sang so much during World War II for soldiers everywhere, and to help in the war effort to raise money beyond the demands of her own career. And that idea of the public spokesperson, and also I think something that doesn't get spoken about enough, you know, the really extraordinary position this put a black woman of her time in. I mean, she was as popular in her time, they did a poll at that time, as Mamie Eisenhower and Eleanor Roosevelt.
Wow.
I mean, that's just, and that's back in the 50s. I mean, that's just incredible.
I just got chills all over my body. Oh.
Well, now,
isn't that wonderful? What I love so much about her is that here she was, this very mild-mannered, you know, non-attention-seeking type of personality, that she would become the face, you know, of this incredibly pivotal point of change in American history, and that she herself was as far away from that as possible. What it brings to mind to me is the whole image of the Christ, of this great, great, great spirit being born in a manger,
mm-hmm.
something so simple. And I see that same sort of interesting dichotomy with Marian Anderson, you know, that here she was, you know, this very, you know, mildly mannered, very, you know, a person who was as far from craving the spotlight and the attention as you can get. And yet she was. And I just think that the gods have such a sense of humor, because those are always the ones that get drafted, you know.
Well, I'm always tickled when I'm telling younger people about her. And we'll talk about that in a minute, because I have some questions for you about that. But whenever you do, because I say, well, you know, she wasn't really an opera singer. She was a recitalist. And
that's right.
And the thing that is just beyond amazing And one of the biographies that I was reading about her, when they gave the itinerary of her different tours to South America, to South Asia, through Europe, over to Russia, to be the first person of color to sing to the Japanese emperor in 2,500 years. And the irony of all this, as you say, is that I can remember when she's sitting in that wonderful party at Horrocks, and they're she doesn't even know that they're really seriously thinking about bringing her to the Met. And he asked her, had she ever considered, you know, would she consider singing in something like Masked Ball, and does she know it? And she says that she really didn't know any opera as a musician from beginning to end. And I'm sitting here thinking, this is typical Marian Anderson, to just flat out and say, well, really, actually, no. And then they have to essentially really convince her this is something that she should do, because she's only going to do it if she knows she can do it supremely well. And then she recognizes it as duty and goes, all right, fine, let's do this. Even though she knows this is something she should have been able to do in her 30s. They should have done this in 1930, when her voice was at its peak.
Of course, and not in the twilight of her. I mean, of course. But that speaks to what was going on at the time. You know, that has nothing to do with her, you know, the beauty of her talent, and, you know. Let me ask you, what is this for again, this project that you're doing?
What we're going to do is that when the Met just released the 1955 recording of her debut on CD, and I thought it might be a good occasion to revisit her now that we have it in a cleaned-up modern form. I have a lot of these things on old, ancient LPs that I've found in 1,000 different used record stores. And I thought, well, this might be a good occasion to look back at her life and also to discuss, and the next thing I'm going to ask you, to discuss how you think people view this today. I think it's very difficult for someone either not oriented in either Black history or American history to begin to fathom the level of obstacles with which she had to deal.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, I think you're absolutely right. And even if we go further down the line, you know, when you look at somebody like Leontine Price, who had all kinds of death threats and that sort of thing, you know, during her time, during her reign at the Met, you know, if you sing there, we're going to do this. And so Marian Anderson came, you know, long before that. So just speaking to the technical aspect of how, you know, how challenging it is when we're talking about a refined art form. And, you know, we're talking about classical music, or we're speaking about opera, and just how difficult that is to do anyway. For anyone, how difficult it is to just to have that technique on the instrument and to sing so beautifully every time with such elegance all the time is not an easy thing to do. It isn't. It's not. I mean, it takes training. It takes work. It takes practice. It doesn't just happen. I don't think people just, you know, God gave her the instrument. And she herself had the incredible intellect and heart so that the great gift that she was given was passed through her sensibilities, and she was able to deliver it in a way that was so touching and so meaningful to so many people. But just the act of doing that alone is difficult. Now, you marry that with the incredible obstacles of the time, the incredible hatred and the constant, you know, ugly rhetoric that she had to, you know, be confronted with on a moment-to-moment basis. I mean, even when she was traveling for her recitals, you know, she couldn't stay in the hotels. The pianists were allowed to stay there, but she had to try to, you know, find someone from the neighborhood or the community church who would house her and that sort of thing. Or conditions were never, you know, I think about now a lot of these great, you know, singers that we have and some of the demands that they have in terms of, you know, what they need in order to be able to give a performance. You know, she had every possible, impossible obstacle placed in front of her. So, you know, forget about saying that I need the air conditioning turned off or I need to have, you know, these kind of M&Ms or I need to, you know, all of the demands that some of the singers, you know, require today in order to be able to do the work. She was just walking with her instrument and, you know, took such pristine care of that, of this incredible gift that she was given, and was responsible. You know, she was so responsible in just the handling of the gift itself. For me, is incredible, because I certainly understand as an opera singer all that's required, and as a classical singer, all that's required to get up there and to be able to do it from a technical standpoint and from a standpoint of presentation and delivery. And I know the cost of that, and I know how much that takes, how much is required. But under those times, under that, under those circumstances, it's just, it's a word that's overused today, and I don't like it, but it leaves me awestruck. It really does. For the incredible amount of, you know, tenacity and self-awareness and just belief and strength and inner strength that she had to have to be able to live the life that she led in such a time of hostility. It still exists at some point today, there's no doubt, but at the time that she came along, she was the trailblazer. She encountered unspeakable, you know, things which we couldn't even fathom today.
Well, you know, in many ways, you've gotten to do, and this is, to me, really the really interesting part of our historical legacy. She had been asked at different times. I think it was once there was talk at the Paris Opera for doing Samson and Delilah. And, of course, Stanislavski wanted her to do Carmen. And these were things she never got to do, and you did.
Well, you know, I am so grateful to her and those who came before her, you know, Cicerita Jones, Black Patty, all those
right.
wonderful artists who came before even Marian Anderson, for those people who really paid an incredible price for us to walk on the path that we walk on today. You know, I am always aware of that. I am always sitting, you know, in gratitude of those wonderful soldiers like Marian Anderson, who made our walk an easier, gentler one. And I don't take it for granted. I do understand, as much as I can understand, what price was paid.
Well,
and so it was an incredible moment of my life to sit across the table from this woman in her house and speak with her, and just how comfortable she, you know, how much she put me at ease. And by the time I met her, she was already quite fragile. And she was extremely enthusiastic about the work she was doing with the Salvation Army and working with children, and she enjoyed that. And those, she wanted to talk about those things. She never wanted to talk about, you know, her past. And she wanted to talk about where she was.
Well, you know.
Found.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to ask you was what must it have been like for you to finally actually meet this person and sit there and for it to become a living, I mean, a real, I can't even imagine sometime when I hear her, I thought, what would I even say to her if I'd ever met her?
Exactly. Well, I was very nervous. I mean, I was incredibly nervous. I went to go meet her, and the first thing I did when her nursemaid opened the door, I said, which way is the ladies' room? I was just so beside myself. And so as I was coming, and I've shared this story a lot, as I was coming out of the bathroom and walking towards the parlor where we were going to have tea and chit-chat, I could hear the clicking of a walker behind me. And before I turned, I heard this voice say, "Are you Denise Graves?" You know, one of the deepest, richest, darkest, strongest voices that I ever heard. And I turned around, and I saw this little frail woman whose voice had as much strength and power and command in it that it always embodied. And somehow, to me, the frame did not fit the strength of the voice that came out. And there she was, and I was looking at her thinking how often I'd looked into her face in photographs and in books and on records and that sort of thing. And here I was looking at this woman, and I felt as if I had walked into the history books. I felt like I stepped inside of the pages, and that somehow there was some crazy intersection of our lives. And how did that happen? And I'm eternally grateful to have had that experience. But I was so nervous, you know, I was really so nervous that and also I was very careful with her, and I didn't, you know, I didn't know what she would be like and what her personality was like, and sometimes, you know, she was, you know, and she would tire easily, and there were people there, you know, looking after her, and so there was a lot to work with, you know, there was a lot that I had to work under.
Right.
You know, in the time of being with her, because, you know, she had the people around her who were, you know, protecting her, and so there were, you know, there were lots of other energies in the room, but she was as strong and as present and, you know, as alert and aware as she could be, and I was, you know, and my mother was with me. And I asked after we left that day at her home, I said, may I come back to see you? She said, well, if you bring your mom. So she and my mom had such a great time chit-chatting. And the nursemaid said to me when I was there, she said, oh, you just missed Kathy Battle. She just left, you know, 15, 20 minutes ago. And so I could understand that she was entertaining quite a lot of, you know, guests, and people were demanding a lot of her time. And I didn't want to be a drain on her energy and on her spirit, you know, but I was just sitting there just real, you know, awestruck at this incredible figure whom I have, you know, learned about and throughout my life, but now would, you know, the name Marian Anderson would hold so much more meaning for me because, you know, we're both African-American women. We're both mezzo-sopranos. We sing exactly the same repertoire. You know, I'd been honored with the Marian Anderson Award. Here I was in her home, you know. All of these wonderful, we'd sung in a lot of the same places. And, you know, it was incredible. And I'd worked with her nephew on several engagements. And there were all these connections. And now there's a film that's been trying to see the light of day about her life, and we're just, I want to lift that up and put that out there, and hopefully that, you know, that will get picked up and that we will be able to share more of the life of Marian Anderson with the world.
Well, it's funny you would say that, because immediately whenever I think about her life, it's an epic poem, it's a film, it's a great drama. And so many of histories, American history, Black history, European history, the history of song, the history of opera, the history of these institutions, all intersect in her life and in her time. And as one writer said about her, and she met it all with both nobility and grandeur.
Exactly. And this she possesses. She possessed this. This is why, you know, she was chosen as the soldier for us all, because there was such an regalness, really, about her. And even, you know, when I met her in her fragile state, she had one of these voices that commanded respect and attention right away. And so that power was very much present in her demeanor.
I personally think
that she would have been a great figure had she not sung at all. I just think that music was her vehicle. But I think we were supposed to know of Marian Anderson.
Well, as you say, it even comes across in photographs. It's overwhelming, an overwhelming sense of dignity.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, I can't thank you enough that you've answered all. I had all this string of questions. You've answered them all.
That was terrific. I'm happy about that. And I do wish you well on this project, and I want to thank you so much.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time.
Project.
Well, it's
because isn't it wonderful that here we are, her children, you know, not directly her children, but the children of somebody, you know, we're all connected. And here we are, her children, telling her lies, you know, and making sure that people know this incredible American treasure, who she was.
Well, just in passing to close, what can you tell me just very briefly about this film? Was it American made, or has it a foreign origin? Or
well, it's very much still in its embryonic stages. Mm-hmm. You know, they've still been shopping it around. I've been approached about it now for 2 years now, and they have been shopping it to different, you know, production companies, and they are tireless. They want to see this film, you know, get made about her, and so I'm certainly, you know, hopeful that that will come to pass. So we shall see. I mean, they have the script, they have everything. A lot of the players in place, it's just got to find a home.
Right, right. Well, that would be magnificent. Well, we can't thank you enough, and we wish you all the best in your career, and we thank you also for all the wonderful music you've given us.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.